Please welcome Pavol Rusnak, which is currently developing a Tresor with a colleague of his. He himself is a co-founder of Brim Labs and a Fab Lab in Prague. His colleague, I think, is the one who invented shared Bitcoin mining, pooled Bitcoin mining. And today, they will show us a secure device for storing or actually authenticating Bitcoin transactions called Tresor.
So thank you for the introduction. And I will try to reintroduce our team again. So you might recognize the guy on the left. It was mentioned. It's Marek Palatinus, also known as Slash, inventor of mining pool concept, and also operator of the first mining pool, which is still one of the biggest, with around 10% of hash rate on a Bitcoin network. He also invented Stratum protocol, which is currently used in miners' pools and in Bitcoin clients. And the guy on the left is me, Pavol Rusnak, and I'm responsible for some smaller Bitcoin projects, like, for example, coinmap.org. And together we form with Alena, who is sadly not in the photo, a company called Satoshi Labs. And we try to have something like an umbrella organization for this Bitcoin-related project. One of the most important problems in Bitcoin mass adoption is security and safety of Bitcoin private keys. By security, I mean the security of the end user's computer, because we have compromised computers with viruses and malwares and keyloggers. We also have, for example, in internet cafe, computers we don't trust. And what's not very common nowadays, but may be common in future, are rigged clients, which look like the regular clients, but they do something they are not supposed to do. And by safety of Bitcoin private keys, we mean data, or more particularly wallet loss, during various disasters, hard drive failures, naive reinstalls of operating system, and also failing to do proper backups, which is very easy, for example, in Bitcoin Qt, where not a lot of users are aware that you have to backup your wallet regularly, otherwise you will lose your Bitcoins. And solution to this, we think, is hardware wallets. Hardware wallet idea is not new. First, I encountered this idea during a Bitcoin conference in Prague in 2011, when Clemens Kep introduced us to his project of hardware wallet. Sadly, he didn't pursue with his students this idea of Arduino-based hardware wallet further. And after Bitcoin conference 2012 in London, we decided with Slash to create a project that is now known as Tresor, to actually bring this hardware wallet idea to life. We decided to follow the keep it simple principle. So we are building a USB gadget, more particularly a human interface device. It has an OLED display and OK cancel buttons, which require physical interaction with user to confirm or discard transaction. And we don't have batteries because we use just power from the USB. And we don't have radio like Bluetooth or wireless, because we aim to focus on the security of Bitcoin transaction, not mobility, which is quite good nowadays. What's inside of Tresor? We use ARM Cortex-M3 microcontroller, more particularly STM32F205, clocked at 120 megahertz, It has half a megabyte of flash for code, 128 kilobytes of RAM, and hardware random generator, which I will talk a little bit later. And it has OLED display, which is more or less one inch wide. During the development, we also created a Raspberry Pi Shield, which uses the same display. Sadly, Raspberry Pi can't act as a USB client device, just as USB host. So we had to put an extra USB to serial converter chip on board. And this shield was used as a prototyping platform during development phase, because that allowed us to use Python instead of C and to quickly quickly try some stuff before implementing it in much low-level C. And the good thing is that this Raspberry Pi shield follows the same logic as the real Trezor device, so client has no way to determine if there is a real device or Raspberry Pi shield on the other side. So let me give you an overview how Trezor works. First, we have to generate initial entropy, and we want to allow its easy backup. Then we use this entropy to derive master private key and master public key. I call them generators because with these master keys, you are able to generate basically an infinite number of private keys and corresponding public keys and addresses. And if you send this master public key to computer, it immediately knows which addresses are there available to be spent. And because of that, computer can then prepare transactions and send them to Trezor. But these transactions are not having signatures because computer doesn't know the private keys. It just fills in the gaps with key indices. And then Trezor can use master private key to generate these needed private keys from these indices. If the user confirms the transaction, then it's signed using these keys, sent back to computer, and it can broadcast it to the network like it would normally do. The main idea behind this is that private keys never leave the device because they are generated inside of the device, and even during the signature, there is no reason why they should go out. So how do we generate entropy? We use hardware random generator to create internal entropy A. We can request external entropy from computer, and then we use both entropies to generate final entropy. And if we commit to entropy A before receiving entropy B, we can prove that the external entropy was used, for example, with this very simple scheme. More complex schemes were suggested by Timo Hanke and Ilya Gerhardt, where you, for example, by publishing half of the final entropy, you could say for 90% that external entropy was used, and you can increase this percentage by revealing more and more bits from this final entropy. So we have this entropy, which is basically 128 or 256 bits, and we want to somehow make them available for backup. So we use something that's called mnemonic code, which is heavily inspired by what Thomas did in his Electrum client. The idea is simple. We split these bits into a chunk of 11 bits. We have a word list of 248 words. We interpret each this chunk as an integer between 0 and 247, and use the word from word list to create the sentence. We could use entropy directly to generate the master private key, but we decided to do something more complex and standardize it as a mnemonic code BIP39. So what we do is we use PBKDF2 to generate master private key. It's a construct that uses pseudo-random function HMAC SHA-512. We use password, as a password we use mnemonic sentence, and we solved it with a string mnemonic concatenated with user secret. And that allows us to create something like password protected mnemonics. So the idea is you write down this 12 or 25 words on a paper, put it in a safe, and if someone steals this paper, he doesn't have your master private key because he has to provide this user secret if it was used. And also a nice side effect is that it provides plausible deniability, because if you give some different user secret to an attacker, he would obtain a different master private key and completely different set of addresses. And if you are clever enough to send some small amounts of bitcoins to these fake addresses, he can never know that you gave him a right or wrong user secret. We use 496 iteration, and desired key length is 512 bits. That's because there is another standard called hierarchical deterministic wallets, which use exactly 512 bits for its master node. And the idea is that using that construct, you could create basically a tree of addresses, and each level can be some logical way how to divide these addresses into logical groups. So, for example, the first level would be your wallets. Second level would be your different wallet chains, like, for example, main addresses and change addresses. And the third level would be actual addresses of that kind. And the function that generates level 1 from level 0 is called child key derivation function, and it takes data from parent node and index 0, 1 to create different childs of that particular node, and then you can descend deeper and deeper in the tree, and you have some logical structure in your addresses, so it's not like it's flat. This derivation function uses also HMAC SHA-512, and it was designed by Peter C. Pavule, and it's standardized as BIP32. And because it's a very abstract concept, it provides lots of possibilities. The first one I described on the previous slide, but you can, for example, have a first level as a representation of different coin types, like, for example, first node would be Bitcoin addresses, second node Litecoin addresses, and so on, and then you would follow this logical structure deeper. Or you have some even more complex setup. Imagine there is a company that has headquarters and local branches all around the world, and this key that happens to be a headquarter key can derive all keys in all branches all around the world. But if you are a director of a local branch, you have access just to addresses only happened in your branch. What's even cooler, we can push this concept even further and use first node in level 1 for crypto coins, second node in level 1 for generating SSH keys, another node for generating full disk encryption keys, and next node for generating challenge response keys, which can happen in if you have some intelligent door to your house, or maybe even to start your car. And that's very cool, because suddenly your wallet token happens to be identity token. You can do pretty much everything you can. Another problem we found or tackled is that ECDCA signatures require random nonce during signing. For Bitcoin, it's 256 bits. And if you use the same nonce twice for sending different messages, you using the same particular key, you would basically leak this key. This was demonstrated on 27C3 fail overflow talk about console hacking, how they got the PS3 private key. And sadly, it was also exploited in August 2013, where there was Android Java random number generator vulnerability in secure random class, which didn't use enough entropy to generate these nonces, and more than 59 bitcoins were stolen. What was even worse was that all Android clients were affected because the bug was in the shared library below the application code, and also it even if you imported your own private key into Android wallet, you were not safe because the problem was during generating nonces for signatures, not during generating the private keys. So, coincidentally, in August, same year, RFC 6979 was released with implementation in Java and Go. Later, we ported this idea to Python ECDCA with slash, and it was merged in 0.9 release. And the idea is you don't use random nonce for signature, but you generate these bits with HMAC deterministic random bit generator, which is seeded with private key and message. So it cannot happen that you sign two different messages with the same particular key using the same nonce. And it was great news for us because that avoided the problem. It enabled us to do unit tests, which weren't possible before, and now suddenly we could see that Trezor is doing the correct thing for during signing. And also, what was important, that allowed us to prove that Trezor doesn't leak master private key in nonce, because you could create such scheme that would do that. And let me tell you something about integration. In order to be Trezor usable, we need to integrate it into existing desktop clients. So work is being done in Multibit by Multibit guys. And this Multibit uses Bitcoin J and Trezor J library, and Electrum and Armory clients, which are written in Python, which we are really fond of with Marek. Sadly, Bitcoin Qt is pretty complex code base, and we currently have no immediate goal to implement Trezor support into it. And also, upstream is probably not very hesitant to is a little bit hesitant to do such big changes in their code base. The good thing about mobile client, particularly in Android, is that most of new Android phones have USB OTG, which allows them to communicate with USB devices. And because Multibit is written in Java, they can pretty reuse most of the code base that was written for Multibit. And also what we are working right now is a native browser plugin, which will create a bridge between low-level USB communication with Trezor to JavaScript, so web wallets can actually use Trezor via JavaScript bindings. And that would allow to finally create safe web wallets, because there would be no private keys stored on a server. So I think that's it. If you want to contact us, there is this email. Please put 30C3 in a subject so I know it came from this conference. Most of the source code is published on GitHub. We will release a firmware source code in January, when we will ship most of the pre-orders. And if there are any questions, I'm willing to answer them right now. I can show them if they want. If they want.
Can I have 3 minutes or so?
Okay. I think 1 minute is okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay then.
So I can show you before you line up in at the microphone. I can show you some early prototype from September. So it looks like this. It's a metallic version, which is more or less final. We will be doing some polishing touches to the version that will be shipped in January. And okay, I don't know if you see it. And it's just a demo screen because that's the firmware back from September. So there is some demo transaction, and I can either confirm it or cancel it. And if I confirm it, then it's just some animation during the signing. And so that's how it looks.
Thank you very much. If you have any questions, you already know the drill. Please line up behind the microphones. So, you have a question at number 3. Please go right ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if your hardware wallet supports other types of complex transactions, like in out of M transactions and such. Mm-hmm.
In the first firmware we'll be releasing in January, there won't be such feature. But because we have a firmware update possibility, we definitely want to include multi-signature in the next version of firmware, and probably some more complex transaction types.
Are there any questions from IRC? Yes, one, please.
It's look like the perfect solution for ATM usage. Do you think maybe Bitcoin ATM machines are integrate it with some popular ATM machines in the future?
I think it should be possible to integrate it with ATM in the future. Well, ATM is more or less common computer nowadays, so I see no reason why we shouldn't go that way. But if because we don't have any Bluetooth or radio, the first version would have to support USB, but maybe in the future there will be some other ways.
Number one, please.
What happens with a Bitcoin stored on the device when it breaks?
Then you would recover your paper wallet with these 12 or 24 words. And using this backup, you can recover it into other Trezor device or just use software that's compatible with BIP39 and send your Bitcoins to other address. So that's the main purpose of these paper wallet backups.
Mm-hmm. Next question from number 4, please.
Hi, thank you for your talk. It was very interesting.
Thanks.
I saw on the website the pre-orders are closed. Do you have an idea when you will be taking orders again?
We will be shipping Trezor to pre-order people in January. And after all these pre-orders are shipped, we will reopen Trezor for regular sale.
In February?
Well, after we are done, so most probably in February, right?
Thank you.
Number one, please.
Are you thinking about another version where you have maybe a power supply within the device and then you could transfer the transactions via Bluetooth or something, which would be more convenient maybe for later uses?
The problem is if we want to have radio in Trezor, we would need to have a battery and other stuff, and it looks simple, but it's adding more and more complexity. I'm not saying we are not going to go this way, but the first version...
Yeah, of course, it's the first version, yes.
Yeah. We will see how market will respond. It's still a new area for us and for everybody, so Maybe it will be needed, maybe it won't. We'll see.
It would be nice, but the first version is already very well. Thank you a lot. Thanks a lot for that.
Thank you.
Another question from number four, please.
Yes, so you talked about update functionality. How do you prevent any kind of update functionality from compromising the device? Obviously, when you plug it in an untrusted system like a web shop, like an internet cafe, or the aforementioned ATM machine.
All right. We have a bootloader that contains our public keys, and all our firmware is signed by us. And if the signature isn't correct, then Trezor will print that you are running unofficial firmware. So you can build your own firmware, but you will have to confirm this warning in order to run it.
Thank you.
Many of you are trying to find seats for the next talk, but please, I know it's hard, try not to queue up the walkways. Any more questions? From IRC, maybe? Okay. Then thank you for the talk.
Thank you very much.